Thank you for listening to Scandinavian Crimes Podcast. Be sure to check out the episode links and be part of our other social media platforms where you can leave a topic suggestion or even share some of your insights regarding the subject matter of the episode. We will always do our best to provide a well-researched episode, but sometimes due to limited access to information and translation issues, some information can be lost. It is therefore good to do your own research and get a deeper understanding of a case of your own interest. So with that all said, let us start today's episode.
So welcome back to Scandinavian Crimes. My name is Devante, and say hello to my lovely co-host, Delilah.
Hi.
And on this podcast, we talk about famous Scandinavian criminals who made their mark throughout Scandinavian history. So I know the last couple of episodes have been just small updates about the world and some other, you know, general things that we may have discussed before. But this case, this is about a murderer, technically a serial killer. And this is about a nurse, and this was recent history, active from 2012 to 2015, and it's crazy how the story transpires. The story was so crazy in Denmark. There's a whole TV show or whole, well, Netflix TV show about it, and it was super good. Me and Delilah had to watch it, so you already know. But in June 2016, a shocking case unfolded in a peaceful town of Nykøbing, Denmark. It would become a tale that sent shockwaves through the community, as well as in the medical field. At the center of this dark narrative, a woman known as Christina, a nurse who did horrible things and was convicted of murdering her patients. So, I'm not going to dive any deeper than that because this story is super juicy. So, grab your tea, grab your snacks, do what you got to do, sit down, whether it be on a train, and enjoy the ride. Because this is the story of the nurse Christina Arstrup Hansen. Christina started her journey into the world of nursing in 2004, initiating her education in Harlev. Her dedication and hard work culminated in her graduation as a nurse in 2009. During her internship at the emergency department of Harlev Hospital, she found herself captivated by the unpredictable and demanding nature of the work. It was there that her passion for the high-pressure environment of an emergency department first took root. After successfully completing her nursing education, she wasted no time and secured a position in the medical department M130 in Nykøbing Falster Hospital. During her tenure, the hospital witnessed a noticeable surge in the number of deaths, particularly on the shifts when Christina was on duty. Matters escalated after the perplexing demise of a patient named Arne Herskov in March 2012. Like the rest of the department staff, Christina found herself under police scrutiny. The investigators were concerned regarding the unusually high levels of morphine and certain substances found in deceased patients' system. Nevertheless, the investigation had to be closed and no charges against anyone was ever made. It was concluded that the patient committed suicide. However, Arne's close ones found that hard to believe. Christina's personal life during that period was similarly tumultuous. She was in a relationship with a man since 2007, where they shortly after had a child together. However, in 2012, her relationship with her daughter's father came to an end. At the same time, her sister got diagnosed with cancer and became ill in the summer of 2012. Around that time, Christina had changed departments from the medical department of M130 to the emergency department in the same hospital. In October 2013, her younger sister died after a grueling battle of over a year and a half with cancer. After the death of her sister, Christina was prescribed medication. During this challenging period, she also resorted to her sister's sleeping medication, Zopiclone. There was strikingly a large number of deaths to many who came to the intensive care unit when Christina was on duty. Several of her colleagues noticed it and had almost become customary during the years of her tenure at the hospital. It had become so prevalent, in fact, that particularly intense shifts involving deaths like cardiac arrest or critical bleeding incidents in the department gradually were named Christina Hansen shifts. However, opinions about Christina at the hospital were divided. Some regarded her as a trustworthy colleague and friend with remarkable skills as a nurse, while others grew increasingly uneasy, harboring suspicious and sometimes terrible feelings as if something was wrong. Part of this suspicion arose from the fact that she frequently was the center of dramatic incidences. From life-threatening bleedings to cardiac arrest situations, she somehow was often the first to administer initial aid. It was almost like she predicted the cardiac arrest before they actually happened. Outside of her professional life, Christina had also managed to draw considerable disdain from some of her nursing colleagues. This animosity stemmed from an incident at her private 30th birthday celebration. This led to disputes and toxic exchanges on Facebook to erode the workplace atmosphere to such an extent that both were eventually summoned to their supervisors. Afterwards, a lot of Christina's colleagues spread many bad rumors about the young woman. When Christina received more and more enemies, people started to not trust her. Her closest working colleagues noticed missing medicine, an increased death rate during her shifts, and many more scrupulous things. The patients who died had overdosed of different medications like diazepam as well as morphine. But what was strange is that it never had been recorded that the patients had been admitted to any of the medications mentioned above. Police would arrive during times when death was completely unexpected. It occurred frequently, and it was kind of normal if some did pass away in the ER. But due to limited evidence and the complete trust of the medical staff, no actions were ever taken by the police up till a certain point. One of the most frequent night shift colleagues to work with Christina was Pernilla. She had an unpleasant suspicion that Christina killed the patients for some time. Her suspicions had been further fueled 14 days before the horrible night of February 28th. On that occasion, four deaths had occurred in the department, which was both unusual and unsettling. What made this particularly eerie was that four individuals who passed away were initially considered completely stable patients. Pernilla told the emergency department's chief physician, Niels, of her concerns regarding Christina, but due to the severity of the accusation, Niels had to receive some more evidence before he could report it to the police. Then came the horrible night shift, spanning from Saturday, February 28th at 1900 to Sunday, March 1st to 0700, 2015. Pernilla on the night shift had made a point to closely monitor Christina's activities throughout the night. However, even before 2100, the shift took a dark turn with the demise of the first two patients. The first victim was a 66-year-old Viggo Holm Patterson, who had been admitted to the hospital the same afternoon at 1629. His life ended at 2035 shortly after Pernilla discovered him with the droplet containing a mysterious white substance. A substance, autopsy revealed, lethal concentrations of morphine and stesolid in his bloodstream. The next casualty was 86-year-old Anne Lise Paulson, admitted to the hospital on the same day at 1356 and passed away at 2037. Subsequently, autopsy findings reveal elevated levels of both morphine and stesolid in her system. What made the situation even more perplexing was that neither patient had morphine in their blood upon admission, as indicated by earlier blood tests conducted before their untimely deaths. After the two tragic deaths, a brief calm settled over the ward. Christina took a break to sleep between 045 to 300, and Pernilla followed with her own rest between 300 and 0433. Before Pernilla went to sleep, she took precautions by checking everything in the medicine room. Upon waking, she re-examined the medicine stock in the shelves and made a startling discovery. During her sleep break, an ample amount of stilocin and four ampules of adrenaline were gone. Additionally, a package containing the potent heart medication Coderone, a so-called cardiac arrest kit, had been tampered with. One of the things that Pernilla said was the following: "When I discovered it, a cold shiver went through me." Shortly afterwards, Pernilla decided to step into room 34 where Christina is attending to 73-year-old Maggie Margareth Rasmussen. Maggie had been admitted the day before at 1037 and, like the previous patients, showed no signs of morphine or stesolid in her blood samples upon admission or later that day. As Pernilla enters the nurse's common room, she spots Christina halting the patient's alarm for 3 minutes. Christina then proceeds to tinker with the patient's drop port in the back of the hand. Then Pernilla enters the room and offers help. Christina declines. Christina fumbles two larger syringes in her left hand and swiftly conceals both syringes between her bosom and upper arm by folding her arms over her chest. To avoid revealing her suspicion, Pernilla plays it cool and heads to the adjacent office. From there, she discreetly monitors the patient's condition via a monitor, unseen by others. In a matter of 3 to 5 minutes, the patient's oxygen sharply drops on the monitor, a clear indicating that breathing has stopped. Shortly after, the blaring sound of the cardiac arrest alarm fills the air. Christina from inside the room urgently announcing the cardiac arrest in room 34. Responding to Christina's calls for cardiac arrest, another nurse arrives at the scene. To her surprise, upon reaching room 34, she finds the patient still maintaining a heart rate of 69. What's even more perplexing is that the bed has already been detached from the wall and prepped for a cardiac arrest, well before the actual event occurred. It's almost as if Christina had foreseen the cardiac arrest before it even unfolded. Maggie miraculously survived the intense events. Although she faced a near-death experience, the swift actions of the medical team brought her back to life, and she continues to thrive even today. Following her resuscitation, in the early hours of the morning, a blood sample was collected from Maggie at 1100 hours the same day. The subsequent analysis revealed yet again an alarming amount of morphine and stilacillin in her system. In contrast, three prior blood samples taken separately the day before had shown no traces of either stilacillin or morphine in Maggie's bloodstream. Following Pernilla's detailed report of the night shift events, the chief physician of the emergency department, Niels, made a decision to call the police. He also wanted Pernilla to secure the evidence, including all bins, patient records, and medications. By the morning at 7:30 of March 1st, Niels reported the suspicious deaths to the police. Over 200 employees were gathered in Nyquil Bing Foster Hospital for a staff meeting where hospital management shared updates on the ongoing investigation into the suspicious deaths that had prompted their contact with the police. At 15:34 on Sunday, Christina received a call from Sitzjellen and Lawland Foster Police, leading to her arrest. Before her arrest, Christina posted on her Facebook profile to share the grim events of her night shift. She described it as the worst day ever, detailing three deaths, a cardiac arrest, and a respiratory arrest. In an attempt to convey the gravity of the night, she even suggested it could be a plot for a distressing film. One of her colleagues, however, found this post inappropriate and promptly removed Christina from her friends list on social media. Christina was arrested on Sunday, and by Monday, she was brought to a closed-door constitutional hearing, shielded by a name ban that kept the charges and her identity away from the public eye. This secrecy meant the press had no access to the details of the accusations or the accused's name. It was also determined, in accordance with common practice in homicide cases, that she must undergo psychiatric examination. Right after the constitutional hearing, Christina's Facebook page was promptly shut down, and since the beginning of the case, Christina has consistently pleaded not guilty. In June 2016, she was sentenced to life in prison for four murders and one attempted murder. Based on Section 237 of the Danish Penal Code, which deals with the intentional homicide, alongside with the conviction, she was stripped of her authorization as a nurse. The Nyquil Bing court determined that Henson had administered lethal doses of different medications to her patients. The trial in the city court spanned 27 days and featured over 70 witnesses. In the courtroom, the prosecutor Michael Boulsen asserted that the motive behind Christina's alleged act were deeply rooted in her personality. Based on the psychological evaluation, it was revealed that Christina grappled with a condition known as histrionic personality disorder, a condition that compelled her to seek extreme attention and elevate herself at any possible cost. This disorder was marked by traits of superficiality, egocentricity, and persistent search for excitement in her existence. Notably, manipulative behavior was also prevalent characteristics, and the examination pointed out that the nurse exhibited an unusually high degree of unreliability. This drove her to commit the heinous acts in a desperate bid to be the constant center of attention. Peniel's testimony is vital in the case against Christina, positioning her as a high key witness. According to Peniel, patients tended to worsen under Christina's care, leading Peniel to suspect deliberate administration of medication to make them sick. Christina shared dramatic stories about deaths from the emergency rooms and sent pictures of items associated with the patients. Peniel believed that these tales were meant to draw attention to Christina rather than patients' conditions themselves. Many witnesses had similar stories to Peniel in their testimonies. However, during court testimonies, a number of colleagues portrayed a vivid image of Christina as an exceptionally self-aware and dynamic nurse. Her intent, it seemed, was not to draw attention to herself, but rather take command when patients' life was in jeopardy. Evidently, many believed in certain situations that she could make better treatment decisions superior to the doctors. Christina stated that she had obtained two medical preparations for Maggie following a request from a female doctor. However, this claim was contradicted by the doctor during questioning, who deemed it absolutely incorrect. The doctor explained that the two preparations could be highly perilous, providing one of the reasons for rejecting Christina's account. At the time of the judgment, Christina appealed the national court, seeking dismissal of her case on May 2017. She underwent a single jury trial in Oster-Landstrup, resulting in convictions of three murders. However, the High Court did review this, but altered the charges to the guilty verdict of attempted manslaughter in four separate cases. Consequently, her life sentence was reduced to 12 years in prison. The basis for this adjustment centered on forensic and evidence-specific details. Although it was established that Christina's medical misconduct did not occur in treatment or pain relievers by mistake, the technical evidence wasn't robust enough to confirm the initial verdict. The service counsel examined the medical data and determined that it wasn't possible to definitively establish the morphine and diazepam injections directly caused by the deaths. Whoa.
Yeah, so this episode had, like, as you know, a lot of information, and it's very hard to, like, know what is a rumor and what is fact, but we really tried our best to get as much facts as possible and not go with all the rumors. But we did, like, mention, because it is important for the story, about the gossips and stuff like that as well. And it also enhances the personality of Christina as well. You know, and also something that I think is important for you guys to know is that the case also have the perspective of the witnesses. So the story told is like perspective of the witnesses and how they perceive it, and how what they saw. So that's why I try to, like, accurately as possible, try to incorporate everything from different views. But most of it is from Pernille's view, because she was or is the key witness. So I think this is important for you guys to know before we, like, start the discussion.
And also before we start the discussion, I know some people will be like, oh, I said some things a couple different ways. So Pernille or Pernille, whatever, I said her name two different ways during the story. I'm not going back to fix that. You know, my brain was battling because in Spanish, it's very similar to pernil, which is like food. But then Pernille.
I think in Danish, it's like pernille or something. I don't know.
My brain was battling for its life.
People out there.
I was struggling and my brain could not, like, it didn't know which one to pick. And then when I was trying to say one of the medicines, I think I said it two different times too. So
yeah, I'm just letting y'all know. My dyslexic brain, I was just like, I'm just gonna copy paste that because I'm not gonna be able to. Like.
And due to how much I speak with Delilah, her dyslexia is contagious. So it fell on me, and there was a couple words my brain just could not latch onto. So forgive me. Just wanted to say that before we got into the discussion. Thank you.
Yes. So okay, let's start with the discussion. So. You know, Christina's personal life was, like, constantly brought up in the story, and is also to add more, like, in-depth understanding of her circumstances. It seemed like she was always trying to find this glory. You have this like aura of like, I'm amazing. But it got worse after her sister's death. And later in the court or the trial, she tried to like justify that of saying that, you know, I lost my my sister and the husband. We got a divorce and stuff like that. To kind of like justify like or say like, I don't know why she said that, for maybe for sympathy or maybe for like this dramatic effect.
I think it was for sympathy. Me personally, but
could be.
But I guess you're going to get to that point eventually, but I really want you to tell them why like they got divorced in the first place.
Okay, so I didn't put that in the story because like it's hard to like, because it's mostly like rumors and there's no way to find that really. But based on the rumors, it was because like the mother was basically drugging the daughter or putting pressure on the daughter, and the father just like, you're crazy, stop doing that. And it has been reported, but there was nothing done about it. So I don't know if it's true or not, but
yeah, it's just, I think it's interesting food for thought, because obviously, me and Delilah saw the Netflix TV show, right?
Yeah, like we listen, I just want to say, we watched it after we like did the research, and it was actually very accurate, but it was from the point of view of Pernil. So
yeah, or Pernilla, how do you say it?
Pernilla.
But yeah, it was Pernilla, like,
I think it's Pernilla. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was like super interesting, especially the perspective of how they did it with the show. And during the show, like, I, you know, Delilah, was like, I'm like, how, why did she divorce her husband? Like, they never really talked about it in the show.
Yeah, they never specified it, They gave hints, like.
Yeah, like, you knew something was off based on how Christina would describe her relationship with her ex-husband, but you never officially knew. And I think it's for the same reason that we can't officially say either, because there's nothing set in stone.
I think in the show, didn't they say like, oh, he abused me or something like that? Like she was blaming.
Yeah, but that was from her perspective though. Yeah, it wasn't like, she was saying, an official
he abused
report.
Me and like, we don't know if that's true, if that conversation happened or not. That is from the Netflix show. But that's why I never really brought it up here. But based on reports that happened, she was charged for drugging, basically. Her daughter with the sleeping medication.
Yeah.
So that is basically, that's the only thing we know for like something that is reported. But in the show, she was kind of saying a bunch of things. And also, I think they did an amazing job in like portraying her personality of being this victim or being this hero. It's like,
yeah, she was like a very charismatic victim.
Yeah.
And it's funny too.
I like that.
I think that was like a really cool mix.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know, she's still a victim, but then she still was someone everyone wanted to be. Christina was this, Christina was that. So
everyone
like a lot
like
of
her, like
So it was like a nice, cool mix that they did in the Netflix show. But also, I want to talk about something else on the Netflix show that I think, my opinion on the show. I'm going to mix this part with my opinion. I said this part, this part with my opinion, but it's based on information that was mentioned in the court. So like, you know how like based on, there was rumors that Christina had a sexual relationship with so it was like, I've always wondered if that was like the case, because in the show it was as if like Christina can do no wrong. And it seemed like a lot of people turned a blind eye to it. So it kind of would, I'm not saying it's true. I'm not saying this is true, but wouldn't you think it could kind of make sense on why she got away with what she did for a long time if it was rumored that she was having sexual relations?
Nobody, everybody was afraid to say or do anything because she was so well liked. And because of her past, because when she was attendant and when she was a student, a nurse student, she was seen as this, like, she was a really good scholar. She was amazing. And like, all of her superiors really liked her because she was giving these calls like better judgment than the doctors and stuff like that. And, you know, she just made herself look so appealing and so amazing to the superiors and to her co-workers. So those co-workers that saw that something was off, they couldn't really say anything because they were not believed in. Like, nobody would believe them.
And also, too, in the court about the whole sexual relationship with the chief physician was that
the chief
they
physician,
try to discredit. They tried to discredit Prunella's point of view.
Boyfriend of somebody else, co-worker. Like, she had a lot of rumors. And that's why I didn't want to put too much of it in the story. But there was a lot of rumors about her and her sexual life and everything.
Because at least how it's portrayed in the Netflix show, once again, this is just the show. I'm not saying this is fact. They, like, kind of showed it as if she had, like, a kind of open life. Because she was single, she liked to go out and kind of just do whatever she wanted. And she was very charismatic. And so the rumor would then kind of match her personality. I guess people made assumptions about her at the hospital and assumed that she probably was sleeping with the chief doctor, when in reality, they never had a relationship. And
honestly,
then they try to use that.
Honestly, we never know if that actually happened or not. Like,
yeah,
honestly,
we don't know.
The chief physician, Nils, he said he didn't in court and also, like, other places, I guess. But... you know, we will never know.
Yeah, and they try
you
to
think
use
a
that
cheater
in court.
Will tell.
They try to use that in court to discredit, I guess, Pernilla's kind of point of view to make it seem like it was a jealousy thing. But like I said, we don't really know what happened. We're only going off the information that was told to us.
I don't think we did mention it in the story, but back then, Nils and Pernilla was kind of like a couple.
A thing.
They were in a relationship, but they weren't really married or anything. They were just started off being in a relationship.
They weren't married
I didn't
yet.
Add it in the story because I didn't think it would be that relevant to the story.
But it was relevant in the court case because they tried to use it as a
thing.
You know,
yeah. And Christina tried to use it as a thing as well. Like, oh, everybody's going against me. All these gossips. Everybody hates me. La, la, la. Like, she's trying to use everything was a gossip and she was not guilty. That's why we added those things because, you know, she tried to use it in court saying, you know, all these things. So
there was a lot of interesting things that they used in court. And what was it? The other one about the professor, like the mortality rate from like 2009 to like 2015.
I want to read that to you guys because there was a professor that made an analytical report on the mortality rates. I don't know if it was with the court or if it was just like the professor's like interest in the court and the case or whatever. But the mortality rates from 2009 to March 1st, 2015, coinciding with Christina's arrest. Noticeably, the years between 2011 and 2012 showed a significant pattern. Like, on average, they were more than double the deaths during Christina's shifts compared to before and after her arrest. And that's just crazy to me. And nobody noticed this increase at all. I mean, they noticed it, but they just, like, didn't think much of it. And the professor highlighted that 1% probability that the increased mortality during the defendant's duty is not a coincidence. So he's like, this can't be like a coincidence. This is crazy, you know? And in 2011 alone, 33 patients died during Christina's shifts, amounting to 2.5 deaths per 100 duty hours, as opposed to one death per 100 hours when she was off duty. So she's like doubling that.
And it's crazy for people who don't maybe don't fully understand numbers, because, you know, I get it.
You know, that's fine. That's fine.
You know, 1% is based on the analysis is like, okay, that's normal, you know, because you're working in an ER hospital, especially during those kind of graveyard hours when sometimes really bad things can happen. You're going to lose some people. But the fact that she was doubling the numbers compared to an entire hospital that was floating on 1%.
Crazy.
And it jumped to 2.5 from her alone. That is a substantial jump. She's doubling the amount of deaths an entire hospital would have experienced within the course of a few years by herself, which
the
is
professor also,
ridiculous.
Oh, it's like the professor also like... concluded that, you know, the excessive mortality had, like, it's established, like, it's there, and this excess of it is not accidental. Like, this is like, there's no way this could happen if she didn't purposely do something. And yes. I think that was important for you guys to know, so you guys get like a kind of like an understanding of what truly happened and like how much. But she was never really reported for that. And even though they found a lot of patients having excess of, you know, or being overdosed by whatever medication she like used on them, they never reported them. And, you know, the evidence were gone because they had to like, you know, bury them or whatever. So that's why she only got sentenced for the three deaths of the patients on the February incident. So
what's interesting about like hospital cases like this is like, you know, we've talked about like killer nurses before, like, you know, like Arnfinn Nisset, for example.
But for some reason, Denmark is doing that. I don't know why.
I don't know. You guys have
what's going on Denmark, honestly.
Yeah, even by U.S. standards,
like that's a little interesting. What's going on? Come on, like,
yeah, I'd be a little worried about your nurses in hospitals, but in reality, what's so interesting is that with hospitals in general, though, things like this can happen. And then because they're so concerned about lawsuits or getting sued or whatever the case may be, whether it's a super high end, you know, hospital versus a very, you know, I guess not so great hospital, all of them have the same motive and they're all afraid of lawsuits and their reputation. And I think that's a part of the reason why, like, I'm pretty sure someone noticed.
This is not a culture only in Denmark. This is like worldwide. Everybody's afraid to report anybody, like, even though people see it, they'd be like, I mean, I guess some people don't want to believe it's happening.
Yeah, some people are in shock. Some people, I think,
and some
as
people
well.
Are just like, yeah, because in the story, a lot of her colleagues were like, we can't believe that she would do something like this, mm-hmm. you know, because she didn't seem like that type of person, I guess. But, you know, there's a lot of similar cases in UK and everywhere else
mm-hmm.
where this issue. Yeah.
Where people, unfortunately, a lot of people who have like those tendencies to kill or have this either hero complex, narcissism, even sociopaths, psychopaths, some of them go into law enforcement, nursing. They can be doctors because they have control over people's lives. And it sucks, but this is a worldwide situation because you have hospitals that are afraid of getting lawsuits. So then they cover up data. They don't say anything. And then people are dying.
Because they don't want to be sued. They don't want to have bad reputations. Everything is about money, basically. Because like they will get money and stuff based on patients and stuff like that. But if nobody want to go there,
then you don't get any money.
And then
especially in this case, because the hospital's reputation was tarnished after that. People didn't want to go to that hospital anymore.
Everybody was afraid, you know, even though the police force and politicians and everybody was like, you guys can go there, like, hurry up, it's fine. Like, everything's normal. We have everything under control. And because that is basically the only hospital in that area, so it'd be hard to shut it down because of this one incident. I get that. And also, apparently, most people in that area is not really healthy in general. So it would be like people have to check into the hospital anyways. So also because of, I forgot to say this previously, but I guess, you know, now I can say it now. Because the people in that area are so unhealthy in their living situations. You know, a lot of drinking, a lot of smoking, a lot of whatever. Like, they are not healthy they're doing those things. So because of that, it was very normal for people to, like, die. So that's also something that was an excuse that, you know, everybody's unhealthy. You know, it wouldn't be weird if they died.
Yeah, they said that even on the Netflix show, yeah.
Yeah, and that's why the police officers were like, yeah, but like, okay, what's up? What's happening? Okay, he died. Okay, great. Okay, bye.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, they said that in the show too.
So you guys won't be like, but oh my God, why didn't nobody say anything? Why didn't police do anything? You know, people can die in the ER. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I guess the police officers, even though they would have done a good job, it would still be like, okay, you know.
Yeah, they trusted the judgment of the hospital staff, so they didn't question it too much. Yeah.
So I understand that. she was just a very good in masking and manipulating. And she basically fooled everybody except for, you know, some people.
Prunella, you know, she was all.
I love her for standing up and, you know, going against the stigma of reporting things like this that are suspicious.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that she was actually trying to find evidence and like report it and everything, and that she talked about it and she didn't really give in, because she actually saved a lot of people, you know, potential people who could have died. So
yeah, and she even did it the right way too. Well, she was taking notes, she was keeping track of medication on that night, and like, that's what she called on the money, top tier detective work.
I think like Devonta just likes her because of the Netflix show.
Yeah, the way they portrayed her, I was just like, nah, she's they on did it. That's a smart gal. I think
if you live in Scandinavia, you're easily gonna be able to watch it. I don't think it's accessible outside Europe.
I don't think so either. You might have to get a VPN to watch it, but
it's amazing.
When you do though,
it was good. The way they made everything make sense and like the timelines and everything is just amazing.
Fire. But let us know what you think. You know, feel free to hit us up on Facebook, Instagram, you know, the usuals. And let us know if you've seen the Netflix show. The Netflix show is called What
Again? I feel
again?
Like we're making a commercial.
Yeah, almost, right? Like we're almost like, promoting this.
It was just that good. It was very, like, based on the information found online. It's very similar to The Witness, obviously, because it was based from that. They also stated that in the show as well. So,
yeah. So let us know if you've seen it. And I guess to wrap up such a interesting episode on a positive note, anything tasty on your mind?
Ooh, I actually want to have, potatoes in the oven. Like baked potatoes. Not baked potatoes. It's like I want to slice it up a little bit so it has like a little bit of crust, and then with some butter and some seasoning, you know, all that. So I want that with, I don't know, what protein should I have? You can say the protein. I don't know.
Steak?
Oh, shit. Oh, well, I guess I can have that.
I don't know. You know what's so interesting? I was meaning to tell you about honey butter.
Oh. That's cool. I mean, with what?
I wouldn't say with what per se, but I heard it's fire. So I'm gonna.
I mean, it's sweet butter. That sounds.
Yeah, good. but it sounded super good, sweet, savory.
Mm. Well, you can't just eat that. You have to eat it with something.
I know.
I mean, if you want to be like it. Eating it from the, I guess it's from like the package. You just spoon it and eat it. I don't know.
You have to make honey butter, but I think I'll probably have it. Ooh, honey butter probably would do really well with some baked chicken.
That sounds amazing. With some chili.
I would like that
with some spiciness to it.
Sure,
I like spicy sweet and butter.
I think the baked chicken with some honey butter would go crazy. But
sounds nice.
Yeah. Hope you enjoyed today's episode, and I wouldn't say sorry for the other two ones, but basically wanted to prepare you for this one. It's a longer episode, and we're trying our best not to flood you guys with absolutely long episodes. Yeah. So,
but this one's just amazing.
Yeah.
So we wanted to make sure that you guys get the full jizz of it. So yeah,
jizz. Let's not say that.
I don't know.
Let's just gonna give up. Wrap it up.
Bye.
And we shall see you all next week. Peace out.
Bye.